ओ भगवत हे वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 10. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text 40. Yata yata bhagavato bhakya paramaya bida nirpaschayadaya satyam Haris touch chintaya yayu. Yata yata bhagavato. Bhakya paramaya bida. Nipaschadya daya satyam. Haris touch chintaya yayu. Yata yata bhagavato bhakya paramaya bida nirpaschaya daya satyam harishchat chintaya yayu. Vaishnavis, yata yata, just as bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, bhaktya, by devotional service, paramaya, supreme, abhida, incessantly thinking of such activities, nipa, kings, Chaija Adaya, Shishupal, Dantavakra, and others. Satnyam, the same form. Hare, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tachintaya, By constantly thinking of him. Yayu, return home back to Godhead. Translation. By devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to his. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same result. Purport. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, in connection with Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatan Goswami, it is explained that a devotee should externally execute his routine devotional service in a regular way, but should always inwardly think of the particular mellow in which he is attracted to the service of the Lord. This constant thought of the Lord makes the devotee eligible to return home back to Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Chakta deham punar janma naiti maameti. After giving up his body, a devotee does not again receive a material body, but goes back to Godhead and receives a spiritual body resembling those of the Lord's eternal associates whose activities he followed. However, the devotee likes to serve the Lord, he may constantly think of the Lord's associates, the cowherd boys, the gopis, the Lord's father and mother, his servants and the trees, land, animals, plants, and water in the Lord's abode. Because of constantly thinking of these features, one acquires a transcendental position. Kings like Shishupal, Dantavakra, Kamsa, Paundraka, Narakasura, and Shalva were all similarly delivered. This is confirmed by Madhvacharya. Paundrake Narake Chaiva, Shalve Kamse Charukmini, Avishtas Tu Hadea Bhaktas, Tad Bhaktya Haram Apide. Paundraka, Narakasura, Shalva, and Kamsa were all inimical toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because all these kings constantly thought of him, they achieved the same liberation, Sarupya Mukti. The Jnana Bhakta, the devotee who follows the path of Jnana, also attains the same destination. If even the enemies of the Lord achieve salvation by constantly thinking about the Lord, what is to be said of pure devotees who always engage in the Lord's service and who think of nothing but the Lord in every activity? Translation again. By devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to his. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same result. Om Agana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Bhakti is all about incessantly thinking. And material existence is also all about incessantly thinking. Bhakti takes the extraordinary power of the mind to be caught up with something and attaches it to the lotus feet of Krishna. Material existence takes the extraordinary power of the mind and wraps it up in the cycle of repeated birth and death by our pursuing material profit, material gain, material fulfillment. So what we're dealing with is an issue of absorption. You must be absorbed. So how are you going to do it? As you know, Tatastha Shakti, the marginal potency of the Lord, means One way or another, you have to go. Just like the beach. Sometimes the beach is covered by water, sometimes not. Similarly, sometimes, although the living entity is spiritual, that same living entity can be covered by the material energy. It's an abnormal situation. And this is something we should think about. Our position in the material world is abnormal. It's distorted. It's perverted. There's something about living in material existence, though, that makes it seem natural. And that is the power of Maya. As Lord Kapiladev explains in the third canto, Jantarvai Bhava Etasmin Yam Yam Yonim Anuvarde. The amazing thing about material existence is that no matter what body we take, we feel at home in that body. This homely feeling, this is our enemy. And we have to think about that. What's wrong with feeling comfortable in this world? Isn't that what it's all about? And once you start to want to feel comfortable in this world, then naturally you want to appeal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as your order supplier. Dear God, make me comfortable and happy in this world. I want to feel nice in this world. So we have this body that we want to feel comfortable in, and we have the material world we want to feel comfortable in. And in this way, we pervert religion by expressing devotion in order to achieve those goals of feeling nice in the body and nice in the world. This narration of Prahlad Maharaj teaches us many lessons. One lesson that I have been meditating on is how Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport that the exchange of devotional service for the fulfillment of material desires is quite common. So we have to look deep in ourselves and see how that may be going on. In material life, people work hard and they feel entitled for a vacation. So it may be that within us, we have this idea that we do a lot of service, and then, okay, Krishna, now what are you going to give me? I've earned it. I deserve it. When you go through some intense phase of devotional service, if you're lucky, not lucky if you're fortunate. You have the good fortune to have at least phases in your life where you were absorbed in intense devotional service. Then afterwards you may think, oh, that was really intense. Okay, now I really deserve a good material time. And this is quite common. Because we're so conditioned, therefore we want to trade with Krishna. I did some intense service for you. Now, please give me at least a nice, happy time in the material world. What the process of bhakti is trying to train us for is constant immersion in Krishna's service, constant immersion in thoughts of Krishna without a break. What causes the breaks? We know from the beginning of Bhagavatam, ahaituki apratiyata, inatma supersedati. The breaks are caused by material desires. That's what breaks up our service capacity. That's what causes us to be frustrated by impediments in the material world, and therefore we say, I can't do service because of this impediment, that impediment. It's impossible. What does Prahlad Maharaj show? He goes through circumstances inflicted by his father that would cause any other devotee to drop his or her service and become actually angry at Krishna. What is this? I'm your devotee, and now I'm going through all this. This is another common tendency of ours. We spoke about the first tendency, which is to exchange dedicated devotional service for the fulfillment of material desires. Exchange. And the second one is that we will accuse Krishna at the drop of a hat. And Prahlad is the greatest example of going through extraordinarily hellish, terroristic circumstances, but he never fretted. He never accused Krishna. In fact, he didn't even accuse his father. What was Prahlad thinking while Hiranyakashipu was putting him through all these tortures, trying to kill him this way, that way? Prahlad was thinking, my father must be playing with me. How did this mentality come about? It's because Prahlad was wrapped in absorption, remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the master of smaranam, as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu explains. Prahlad is the exemplar of remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That remembrance is so intense that he was not at all taking what his father did to him as something inimical. Of course, then again, after Lord Nrisimhadeva killed Prahlad, Prahlad did express that my father has done major sinful activities, very grievous sinful activities by his persecution of me. But I wish that you guarantee his freedom from material existence. Now, Prahlad spoke a very interesting thing. He said, I know my father, Hiranyakashipu, is already free from material existence because you glanced over him and he touched your lap. Therefore, he's free. But just to emphasize the point, I'd like to hear it from you that he'll be free. So that was the benediction that Prahlad asked for. You may recall how Lord Nrisimhadeva apparently tested Prahlad. Prahlad, you have pleased me, and it is my pastime to fulfill desires. Prahlad asks from me anything you want. And what will you have done in those circumstances? Well, how long does the list get? But Prahlad said to Lord Nrisimhadeva, my lord, please understand my family background. You know my family history. I'm from a dynasty of asuras, of demons. Please don't tempt me offering material benedictions, because I have the family background that normally I'd go for that, because that's the nature of materialists. Immediately, they seize upon offers of material benefit. But actually, Prahlad expressed, I know that you're just trying to demonstrate the qualities of pure devotion. You're not actually trying to tempt me. It's not your methodology to try to entrap your devotees. You're simply calling attention to devotional service without material motivation. And you've sent me into this world to demonstrate that. So Prahlad simply asked for the freedom from material existence for his father. Lord Nrisimhadeva, however, was still wanting Prahlad to take something. He wanted to induce Prahlad. All right, you're not taking any material benefit. Still, I'm going to give you this, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants to demonstrate that he's full of everything, spiritual and material. And he had a particular reason for pushing a material benediction on Prahlad. He wanted Prahlad to rule the world, take up his father's throne, and give the people a government of spiritual development. So Lord Nrisimhadeva asked Prahlad, you take this, please. And don't worry, it doesn't matter that you're going to be in the material world. Basically, Lord Nrisimhadeva told him, for you, the material world doesn't exist. It doesn't matter that I'm asking you to remain in the material world as emperor. Because you're always absorbed in thought of me. There'll be no question of material existence for you. So again, we get back to this point of absorption. What is our mind absorbed in? As we start to make some progress in bhakti, we're amazed by how the mind can get us into trouble and how it can really have such great potential. As Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, the mind can be an extraordinary instrument for taking us back to Godhead. It's got that kind of power. But material existence takes our mind and shreds it, splays it out in countless directions, bahu shaka hinantascha. And in this way, our material existence goes on and on and on, driven by the mind. What Narada Muni and Yudhisthira are talking about in this chapter is all about the intensity of the mind absorbed in serving Krishna. That's how the whole narration about Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu and Lord Sringadeva began. Narada Muni is explaining to Yudhisthira that the demon, Shishupal, merged into the Lord and then went back to Godhead. So Yudhisthira was astonished by this. And so to explain how even thinking about the Lord as enemy gives you the supreme destination, to explain that, Narada Muni narrates Yudhisthira Maharaj the whole history of Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu, and Lord Nrisingadeva. In other words, what set off that presentation of history was all about intensity, the question of intensity, absorption. Yudhisthira was asking, how is it possible? They were enemies. How is it possible that they achieved the supreme destination? So then Narada Muni, as the guru, goes through a lengthy explanation about how any way you approach Krishna with intensity, you're going to benefit. Kama, dvesha, bhayat, krodha. You can do it through lust. You can do it through hatred. You can do it through fear. You can do it through anger. Some or other, if you touch fire, it's going to burn you. So this is why Narada Muni is explaining this whole history of Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu, and Lord Nrisingadeva. He wants to get this point across about intensity and absorption. Now, we have to admit, in our sojourn through material existence, intensity and absorption is no stranger. You can analyze your own personal history, and you'll see so many examples of when you got absorbed in something. When you had intense experiences. Of course, Kali Yuga provides its devilish experiences, but still, the point is, there was absorption, there was intensity. How are we going to transfer that same propensity for absorption and intensity from material life to Krishna's service? There is the key battleground area. I've got to be absorbed. I've got to encounter intensity, whether you want to admit it or not. You like absorption. You like intensity. Your mind has to be absorbed in something. And you, as a person, have to get intense about something. You may not readily admit that. No, I'm not intense. I'm just an easygoing person. But no, no. Everyone likes to get intense about something. You just have to find out that particular thing in your life you like to get intense about. It's there somewhere. So bhakti is all about maximum intensity for Krishna. One thing I always tell myself is, I look at times in my life in which I really sacrificed and was very intense about something material. And then I say, I have to at least be that intense, that intensely absorbed for Krishna's pleasure. Otherwise, it's cheating. At least there should be equal of course, obviously, Krishna deserves more. So you're hearing now that not only Shishupal, not only Dantavakra, but many, many other kings who acted as enemies of Krishna attained salvation at the time of death. Why? Because they thought of the Lord, they received spiritual bodies and forms the same as his. So therefore, Narada Muni, in today's verse, is giving further explanation. By devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to his. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieve the same result. So you may wonder, how is it possible to incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of God? Well, tell me this. How is it possible to incessantly think of material things? Somehow or other, that seems normal to us. Well, you know, there's so many things in material life to think about. Think about your body, think about your mind, think about others' bodies, others' minds, think about politics, economics, sports, think about making money, think about just trying to survive. So many things to think about. How can you incessantly think about Krishna? We have forgotten. And that forgetfulness is caused by contact with the material energy. It's a very unusual, peculiar situation in which we have forgotten how to incessantly think of Krishna. To the extent that incessantly thinking of Krishna seems so foreign and strange, so far away for us. Because that situation is there. We have become separated from our natural situation. We have the process of bhakti yoga. And Prabhupada explains in the beginning of the purport that Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami, as recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how to practice Raghunuga Bhakti. First one begins in bhakti with duty. And then, because of duty consciousness, gradually spontaneous consciousness develops. So we can't skip over the duty phase in bhakti. That's why it's so wonderful to have devotional duties, devotional commitments. They're not there to burden you. They're not there to harass you. They're there to prepare you for the spontaneous stage of bhakti. So if you look in your life, if you look at your spiritual life and you see duty and commitment, you should feel very favored. And if there's no duty and commitment, you should wonder, where is Krishna's mercy? Duty and commitment is the necessary precursor to spontaneously thinking of Krishna. Without having a firm foundation in bhakti, duty, and commitment, we'll always be so far away from our natural spontaneity. And everyone appreciates natural spontaneity, although they think they see it in the material world. That's why people like children. They seem so unfettered, so non-artificial, natural, bubbling forth. So adults always look back at the childhood years, and the New Age people talk about reviving your inner child. And spontaneousness in Krishna service is very attractive, and it should be our goal, but we should understand what we have to do to achieve that goal. Once we achieve that goal, we start to feel what is our natural relationship with Krishna. It's nothing contrived. Sometimes you hear devotees, for example, say about the deities, "Oh, I like Jagannath more than I like Gornitai." Or, "These are my favorite deities, Sri Sri Radha, such and such, as compared to those deities." It's a nice sentiment, that's all. It is not grounded in any absolute spiritual reality. It's a nice sentiment. One shouldn't take it too seriously. When your natural attraction arises, there'll be no doubt about it. One doesn't have to force it. One doesn't have to contrive. It happens of its own accord. Sometimes there are controversies, especially in India, that, no, you just can't let the spontaneous Raghunuga Bhakti develop of its own accord. You know, you have to have the right situation or contact the right person or take initiation from the right person. But Lord Chaitanya clearly explains in his instructions to Sanatana Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamrita that it's the natural development from devotional service done according to duty and commitment. From that, the bhakti, the spontaneous bhakti, the raga, naturally arises. And Srila Prabhupada made that clear again and again and again. If we perform our duties and commitments that the acharya has given, and obviously to continue to perform those duties and commitments, your heart has to be into it at some point. Then after some time, you'll become aware of what is your natural relationship with Krishna. But there's no need to force it. There's no need to imagine. There's no need to contrive. It happens when it happens. You can't hold a timetable up to Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He's the supreme lover. He knows how to arrange the best loving affairs. He knows how to bring our natural spontaneous love for him. He knows how to bring that out of us. Even in the material world, they have these romance stories where someone was lonely almost all their life, and then when they were in their 50s or 60s, they met the partner of their dreams. And everyone says, oh, it was all worth it. It couldn't have ended. The movie couldn't have ended any better. They found each other. It was better that they waited rather than accept something that wasn't the real thing. Everyone will say like that. Everyone will get a little sentimental and teary-eyed at the end of the movie. Yes, yes. They were star-crossed. They just didn't meet up right away. But it was worth the wait. It wouldn't have worked otherwise. So, similarly in bhakti, when Krishna decides to show his mercy to us, we'll agree. It couldn't have happened in any better way. It couldn't have happened at any better time. But before it happens, we're always grumbling. When's it going to happen? When will Krishna show up? So in this way, we fret and sometimes we start to accuse Krishna. I'm doing so much. Why don't you do something for me? And a common way that demand on Krishna manifests is we want to exchange. We want to exchange devotional service for the fulfillment of material desires. We may not want to admit this so much at first, but as Srila Prabhupada writes earlier in the seventh canto, it's quite common. So that means we have to look at ourselves and see how we're doing that. I've served Krishna, therefore I have earned such and such. I've done some service for Krishna, therefore I should get some respect. I should get some special dispensation in terms of freedom from material miseries. We have some expected material return in mind. Prahlad Maharaj's example, however, teaches us the opposite. And that's why devotees love to meditate on this pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrisingadev. Lord Nrisingadev didn't actually appear in order to kill Hiranyakashipu. Lord Nrisingadev came because of Prahlad. After killing Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrsingadev's roaring was shaking the whole universe. Brahma was afraid. If it goes on like this, the whole universe will be destroyed. You know, Brahma's the creator, so he had reason to be concerned. Lord Nrsingadev was roaring. It sounds like he's about to destroy the whole cosmos. That can't happen. So Brahma turned to Prahlad and said, "My dear boy, please, it's because of you." He put the blame on Prahlad. "It's because of you that Nrsingadev has appeared. So therefore, you step forward and try to calm him down. Because no one else could do it. Brahma couldn't do it. Not even Lakshmi Devi could do it." So Brahma pushed forward Prahlad. And it was Prahlad who pacified Lord Nrsingadev. Various shastras explain how, you'll find it in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, all the various shastras summarized about how Lord Nrsingadev received Prahlad. Prahlad paid his dandavats, and Lord Nrsingadev picked him up, patted him on the head, and also, like a lioness licks her lion cubs, Lord Nrsingadev licked the whole body of Prahlad. And then Lord Nrsingadev calmed down. When we hear about how the enemies of Krishna can get the same result as devotees, we may wonder, well, then maybe it'll be easier for me to be an enemy of Krishna, because bhakti can seem a little tough sometimes. Yeah. Maybe it'd be easier for me to act demoniac and oppose Krishna, and in that way connect to Krishna. But actually, Rupa Goswami explains, it's much easier to serve Krishna favorably and achieve the supreme destination than to serve Krishna unfavorably, to become his enemy. To actually be an enemy that attracts Krishna's attention and warrants Krishna's personally killing of you, that takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of intensity to hate Krishna that much. This is so true that in the seventh canto, Narada Muni makes a very interesting exclamation. He says, if I could only love Krishna as much as these special demons hated him. Narada Muni is showing how a devotee can learn from any situation and always thinks himself deficient. Just see these demons. Their intensity in hating Krishna. If only I had that intensity to my bhakti. So what is the point? In conclusion, what is the point that why the acharyas, why Narada Muni, why Srimad Bhagavatam is bringing up this point? Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same result. This point keeps coming up. The same result. And naturally we say, why? They were enemies. They hated Krishna. The same result. It's to show how attractive Krishna is. Somehow or other, if you connect to Krishna, he's so attractive, you'll come out better, even if you're his enemy. And furthermore, not only does this show how attractive Krishna is, but it also makes you think, if the enemies of Krishna get this result, obviously it'll be so much more so for Krishna's devotees. That is the point. It's meant to encourage, this presentation is meant to encourage our favorable relationships with Krishna. Why should you worry? Just think, look what the demons got, the enemies of Krishna. Don't you think you're going to get much more expediently because of your service to Krishna? So therefore, Prabhupada writes, however the devotee likes to serve the Lord, he may constantly think of the Lord's associates, the cowherd boys, the gopis, the Lord's father and mother, his servants, and the trees, land, animals, plants, and water in the Lord's abode. So you're getting the whole picture of relationship with Krishna, service to Krishna. And if the demons were able to achieve the same result, that's encouragement for the devotees. How much more so will Krishna be inclined to you because of your positive devotional service? Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. I have a question in the purport here. Maybe you could clarify. Srila Prabhupada is talking about that how if the enemies of the Lord achieve salvation, that what is to be said of the pure devotees who are always engaged in the Lord's service. And just before that, he says, the Jnana Bhakta, the devotee who follows the path of Jnana, also attains the same destination.
Yes.
Why is Prabhupada talking about the Jnana Bhaktas?
To again show how all attractive Krishna is. Now, he doesn't say Jnani, he says Jnana Bhakta. That means a devotee who is tinged with Jnana. Of Bahunam Jamanamante, Jnanavam Mam Prabhajate, Vasudeva Sarviti, Samahatma Sudurva. After many, many births and deaths, the Jnani realizes Vasudeva is everything. So that's the Jnana Bhakta. So the enemies of Krishna who hate Krishna with intensity, they get the same result. The Jnana Bhaktas, finally, after many births and deaths, realize Vasudeva is everything. They get the same result. Obviously, the devotees are going to get something. It makes us think.
Thank you.
Guru Maharaj, you talked about duty and commitment. And what is the reason that we don't want to commit or be dutiful in Krishna consciousness?
Duty and commitment takes training. And I was talking with some of my godbrothers, and we were remarking how, you know, it's not that easy to get training these days at our temples. And you're getting to see more and more that training is a great blessing. It's a high fortune. It's not just raining from the sky these days. So if you want to actually solidify in terms of duty and commitment, you require guidance and training. Just like a child requires good parents to instill in the child all the necessary virtues for having a proper life. Without that good parenting, the child can easily just be a space case or just grow up crookedly. So similarly, in our Krishna conscious society, if devotees are going to actually understand what is duty and commitment, and they have to understand duty and commitment before they start thinking about Raganuga, if they're going to do that, they require training. Training means trainers. That's why Krishna says in the end of Bhagavad Gita, no one's more dear to me than the one who explains the secret of bhakti to others. This applies to non-devotees, explaining the secret of bhakti to them, and it also applies to explaining the secret to our own devotees. Our own devotees need training. Otherwise, they'll never solidify in terms of duty and commitment. So as the wave of Prabhupada disciples move on to other realms, other services, we require the next wave of ISKCON leaders, ISKCON trainers, ISKCON developers, so that devotees in general indeed will learn what is duty, what is commitment.
Thank you for your class, Maharaj. Forgive me for being dull, but would you mind explaining a little bit about why Krishna would reward enmity?
The intensity. It's all about intensity. However you touch fire, you get burned. This is how attractive Krishna is. Some or other connect with Krishna. But that intensity of the enemies is very hard. It's very difficult to get. They thought of Krishna night and day. Remember Kamsa? I must kill Krishna, even though Krishna can't be killed. I've got to kill Krishna, even though he can't be killed. He was the pinnacle of being hung up. I've got to kill him, but he can't be killed. Night and day, night and day. But he's thinking about Krishna. Of course, for being inimical, he gets killed. But because he's personally contacted by Krishna, he benefits. But the point is, it's not an ordinary demon who can actually be singled out by Krishna to be personally killed. It's rare status. Don't try for it. It's much easier to try to love Krishna. Still, we can't hide from the fact that kama, dvesha, bhaya, krodha, whether out of lust, fear, hatred, anger, if you get intense about Krishna, you benefit. That is the absolute fact. Archana Prabhu.
All right.
Give us some words of wisdom.
Practical question. You said that you had discourse recently about the lack of training in ISKCON. So you're one of the leaders in ISKCON. What was decided? How are we going to address this problem? What's going to be done?
We need devotees who will take up the austerity of training others. And it's austerity. It's like parenting. Sometimes the parents are appreciated, sometimes not. Sometimes the children praise the parents. Sometimes they reject their parents. It takes a lot of outgoingness and care to train devotees. But I've noticed in my travels that sometimes devotees see that, you start training devotees and they kick you in the face, you put all that time into them and some of them neglect you or they become even inimical. Who wants to do that? I've seen that. Nevertheless, the show has to go on, so to speak. Parenting goes on, even though sometimes... Well, I'm not talking about any particular program. I'm talking about the need for devotees who understand bhakti to train others. Otherwise, how is anyone going to learn? How are they going to carry the ball forward? The men need to be trained. The ladies need to be trained. I'm not talking about, quote-unquote, the bhakta program. That was just one mechanism. Doesn't have to, there's other ways you can do it, but it has to be done. And it's true, most persons are not living in temples, but still, they need some kind of training. Otherwise, how are they ever going to get to that Raganuga platform without duty and commitment? Duty and commitment, that's the essence. Remember, I always quote Prabhupada's classic definition of Vaidhi Bhakti, given in Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. They asked him about sadhana bhakti. Of course, sadhana also includes raganuga at the higher level. But the beginning half of sadhana bhakti is vaidhi bhakti. So they just generally asked Prabhupada, what is sadhana bhakti? And Prabhupada replied, sadhana bhakti means you have to do it because I say. Yeah. duty and commitment. I think I explained before, there was a study done about arranged marriages. In other words, marriages that begin based on an arrangement and a duty and commitment because the parents arranged it. As compared to marriages out of romantic attraction. So the study showed that the romantic attraction marriages start off slam bang. And after, they peak after 3 or 4 years. Whereas the arranged marriages that don't start off slam bang but have to go through duty and commitment. We're doing this because of duty, commitment. And then a gradual appreciation develops, and it starts to peak at the 8th or 9th year and then maintains, generally speaking. But it didn't start off slam bang. It started off, well, we'll do this out of duty and commitment, and we'll show duty and commitment to each other. And from that, real affection develops, speaking on the relatively material platform. So this duty and commitment before real feelings can be expressed is present throughout aspects of the human experience. Of course, the material human experience is based, it's a perverted reflection of the spiritual reality. The topmost portion of the spirituality, Goloka Vrindavan, where everyone loves Krishna, even the water, the plants, the trees, the land. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
And as well.